the first subject always in Sesshin for me is to remind myself and all of us that this is a body practice. There's so much study of Zen and of Buddhism that it often becomes a kind of subject, an intellectual subject, a subject to think about and parse in many different ways. That's a very necessary part of practice. We're thinking animals, and it's our joy and our genius that we're able to exist like this. But it's only a partial way that we live our life. Thinking carries us very far. It's created airplanes that fly across the sky, and submarines that can go to great depths in the ocean. Just driving a car is a kind of miracle of us, our ability. And yet it's only a piece of us. It's only a part of what we are. And although it seems counterintuitive, the other part is all body part. We talk about the Buddha body. Body-mind, Buddha. And the mind of Buddha body is not the same mind as the car designer in a superficial sense. It takes a different kind of life and practice to experience where the car really came from. It came from a very deep place in the body. And so when we practice Zen in this way, having allowed ourselves this experience of a week of silence, of a kind of tranquil life, a slow life, a steady life, then the life of the body begins to shine. And of course, especially in the first days, it also begins to groan and complain because it's really hard and it's used to running around. It's used to standing up at any instant and doing something. It's used to saying things just out of the blue, no matter what, blah, blah, blah. It has a very sort of jolly and active kind of life that's very different from this. And yet, coming to this way gives us a way to see more clearly how our everyday life exists for us and gives us a kind of inspiration for living our everyday, ordinary life in a more clear and honest way. The one thing that we attain, if we attain something in this practice, is the truth about ourselves. What this is, who we are, and where we are, how it is. So in Zen, our comportment is very important. In different practices, Buddhist practices, there is always meditation But if you go to Tibetan Gompa, with all the bright colors and the vivid cushions, all bright red and gold and everything flashing and shining, it's gorgeous. It's very different. But they're sitting still. We had a Tibetan visitor from Vajrayana practicer who came and sat with us 1 week and of Sesshin. And when that person did Oryoki, it was all over the place. Didn't quite follow the rules exactly. He got it all done, but the napkin was over here and utensils were over there, and yet it was his way of doing our practice. Theravadin practice, people eat alone without a sense of community so much as simply experiencing deeply the physical aspect of eating. So in Zen, we begin with the sense of being a body and being a part of a body, the body of the community itself, the communing part of it. That's very helpful. It's also irritating. We always are of two minds about others. And so it's also a practice of being with others in a way that offers us the opportunity to really go deeply into the question of what is other? What is self? But the posture itself is crucial for us because it offers a way to align ourselves without creating words about what we're doing. If we can place our body in a way that frees the breath and balances the whole weight of it, so that we can tell that we are subject to gravity, and we ourselves are a piece of gravity, that we affect each other in a gravitational way, so that front and back and up and down, everything is of a piece of us, and we are a piece of everything. And the more aligned we can be in the vertical way, certainly, as our breath comes from the belly all the way up through, really all the way, and goes as it goes all the way. And our attention to that, to allowing the breath to be what it wants to be, allowing the body to be what it wants to be. So Buddha said, if you see that you're having a short breath, notice it. And if it's a long breath, notice it. But don't try to change it. Don't fiddle around with it. It actually can take care of itself all by itself and is almost always doing that. So although we say, I breathe, this is my breath, we're being breathed almost all the time. And in truth, we're being lived in the same way. This is my life. This is your life. This is our life. As we're being lived. And the more we can trust that, trust this, what Dogen called this raw red body. And it's peculiar life, living itself, living us. Trust it. It's been carrying us for a long, long time. And it will carry us clear to the end. This is a celebration of Shakyamuni Buddha's passing away, his parinirvana. Which is a wonderful model for us. And in the Zen community lately, we've had some wonderful models carrying on from Shakyamuni Buddha's time 2,000 years ago. It's part of our study. If our study is self and other and how to live, it's also how to die. Because our body is also always dying. And like we can trust and accept our life, we can trust and accept our death in the same way. Buddha's passing was kind of awkward. He was feeling sick for quite a while before he realized that he was really finished. He was feeling very bad. And so he had them find a place for him to lie down between two trees. And they said, Buddha, this is a crummy little town. You don't want to die here. This is just the worst little town. Nobody wants to be here. And he said, no, it's fine. It's fine. And he just lay down and let it be. And they said, Buddha, what are we going to do without you? How can we possibly continue without your teaching? And he said, I never meant to be your teacher. I wasn't your teacher. Be your own teacher. Be your own light. It's you. It's you I've been talking about all this time. So as we sit, we keep a straight comportment, trying to balance the head on the two little bones that it's balancing on up here, and lining up the chin and the ears with the shoulders, the nose with the navel. If it's really balanced, it feels good. It's often that we move the head either back or forward, and then it begins to hurt, especially the shoulders. And there is a tradition of a stick that whacks the muscle that gets tight and relaxes it, which Coben put away because he thought it was being misused. It's very tempting because it's a long stick and you can really hit And it feels so good that some people enjoyed it too much. So there is a stick, but we don't use it anymore. But these muscles are the ones that often are tense and tight. And so if the head is lined up properly, then the muscles do relax. The arms want to go down. And then we align the hands also so that the thumbs are just barely touching. And this is a sort of Martin Mosco once said this, shooting out metta from here, just out into the universe from this cosmic mudra. I'm not sure whether that's just so or not, but it certainly unites us. It puts us together in one place where we are. Our onlyness right here, right now. Coben said, counting the breath is like knitting while you're sitting. He said, don't bother with counting. Or if you have to count, just count one. So if you're very restless, that might be helpful. It's more helpful just to rest your mind in your hands and allow your hands to have some life in them, and just rest your mind in them, and be held. There are different ways to do your knees and your feet. And it's important to experiment and change as your body changes, because it won't be the same, even from sit to sit, much less from year to year. So take good care of your body. If we're too ambitious, we can hurt ourselves. So know yourself well enough and care for yourself closely. But don't run away from the pain. We're really in pain all the time. We just don't notice it until we stop. If you watch somebody sleeping, they don't just lie there all night long. They keep moving because gravity is pulling on the body and it gets uncomfortable, and so it has to switch and change. So we do that just without even noticing until we sit down like this. So feel free to feel flexible and relaxed, but be sure not to disturb anyone, especially your neighbor. Just find your stillness, and your body will know what to do. Allow it to be still. And the same is true about speaking, about talking. It's so tempting to want to cover things up with speech, cover up our anxiety, our wish to connect. But if you can remember that we're connecting in a different way, then there's not so much need for bursting out with a comment about the weather or about anything very much, except maybe the tea. It's such a plain practice. It's so simple. We just come in, find our seat, and hold it and trust it. Many, many things happen. So many things. See funny faces on the wall. Animals. Funny animals on the wall. How can that be? It's just our body, our mind just being bored to tears. Now, let's make up something. This is ridiculous. Let's see something interesting. Or maybe the body will develop itches or an uncomfortable feeling. Let's get distracted by something. Even an itch is better than doing nothing. So the first few days, there's always this sort of conversation going on inside us. It's just part of the process of being a human body, a body-mind. But the body itself is the Buddha body. So in a zendo at a temple where there's another place for giving talks, there is no Buddha in the zendo. Because every sitter is the Buddha body. Buddha is each one in zazen. And zazen itself is what we call enlightenment. Awakening. This is our way. And giving sitting instructions, Koban's last thing always that I always try to remember is that most Buddhas that we see in sitting, in statues and pictures, have a smile, a little smile. Not a big grin, but a small, accepting, lifting up the sides of the mouth just a little bit. And in truth, it changes the brain waves. It has now been discovered. After 2,000 years, they wondered what happened to the brain when the mouth smiled. And it lifts the spirits. It actually turns the mind in a positive way. So I offer you the opportunity to experiment with that and encourage you to try to keep a smile, and you'll see how hard it is. This is such a serious thing to do, and we feel so serious about it. We've thrown our whole life into it just by coming here. But the smile will give us some space. And we need that space. It helps the breath to breathe. It helps our mind to relax. It helps us to accept ourselves just as it is. And as we go farther and farther in, begin to see how all the different ways of going about this merge. Even Pure Land, which seems so utterly different from what we do, is another version of this. And Dzogchen, Joseph Goldstein and Sharon Salzberg have taken up Dzogchen although they're old-time Theravadan teachers, they're widening their practice in that way. Some people go to Theravadan practice from Zen, or vice versa. I think that's one of the interesting things about our time, that we're able to be exposed to the different practices without feeling like there's some punishment or some restriction between schools. That the basic teaching of Shakyamuni Buddha is carried through just in different ways. And we find a way that makes sense to us, as Buddha said, and accept what makes sense to you, what opens your heart. So it's interesting to try different ways, but not to go around, what do they say, a Dharma junkie, and go from place to place and try one thing after another. It gets very confusing. But it's nice to dip into things. I know a long time ago now, I went to Plum Village and practiced with Thich Nhat Hanh for a while. And that was sort of Zen, but it was very different. And I went to India and lived with some Atagompa for a while in the foothills of the Himalayas, and got some Tibetan practice from the ground up. So those things are very precious if they're respected for what they are and enhance our practice. They're an encouragement. There's so many different ways and so many sincere people trying to live a good life, trying to be in accord with life. Does that answer it?